Welcome to episode 27 of Pull Up with Miles and Owen. And today we are pulling up to Cleveland with two fabulous guests, two dear friends of the podcast, who both will be making their way to Cleveland mere moments after we finish recording this podcast. First off, Danny Barlavi, women's basketball analyst, Better. They create content for Her Hoop Stats, Winsider, and Odds Shopper. Danny, welcome to the show.
So happy to be here.
And last but not least here, we have Calvin Wetzel in the building. Another women's basketball analyst, one of the best in the biz, journalist with Her Hoop Stats and CBS Sports, and co-host of the Coast to Coast podcast with Krina Mustafa, which you should definitely check out. Calvin, what is up?
Man, I'm so excited to be on here with you guys. I love listening to this pod, so it's an honor, and we talk all the time, but getting to do it on the pod now, so fun.
For real. And we got to, before we get started, can you give us a little look at what you're wearing, Calvin? Because this is iconic right here. On the weekend of Final Four, shout out to our friend Dano for the Asia Wilson baseball jersey.
Thank you to Dano. I didn't have any South Carolina gear, but I figured wearing some Asia gear on the pod would be close enough since we're going to get into South Carolina. So Dano Mataya, thank you for this. The Asia Wilson baseball jersey, limited edition.
This is just a message for all of our future guests. If you want to butter up Owen a little bit, just wear some Asia Wilson gear. This might be the first episode he's not wearing Asia Wilson gear. So we love it. We love to see it. And we're going to talk all about what we're looking at for this Final Four weekend. But we would be remiss if we didn't discuss a little bit what we saw this last weekend. And especially, I want to highlight Monday, because Monday night, it was a paradigm shift. It felt like this moment that we have been talking about for years, since I think we've all gotten into this space. We talked the other day about 2018, 2019, something like that. And to see the sport grow, and how many conversations have we had with family members, with friends about, like, this is what we see. This is what we're witnessing. And to now have that kind of make its way into the general conversation, to lead off SportsCenter for a half hour after the night slate, to just be talked about very poorly across all different kinds of major media platforms because there are people that can't help but pay attention to this now. This was just an incredible moment for us as fans, as media members that have watched this growth. And it was really a perfect storm. It was so many superstars coming to see each other. It was rematches, but it was also the importance, I think, of storytelling. And we've talked about that so often, where I think the advantage in college on the women's side is that you have the time. You've got these four-year players. It's not the one and done. So maybe that's part of it, but it's also bridging these stories together through a narrative cohesiveness by having a studio show. And shout out to Elle, to Andrea, to Shanae for just pulling everybody in and informing everyone in a way that is both relatable and it's just hoops talk, but it's also just so much fun. And that was borne out in the 12.3 million viewers and that was the average. That wasn't even the peak. I think it was like over 16 or something at one point for Iowa LSU. It was over 10 million at the peak for the follow-up game as well. And that was, you know, the Juju versus Paige. So it was another superstar matchup that literally we got the final buzzer and then we got the opening tip with no room to have a cigarette break that we probably needed. Before we get into this weekend, I just wanted to, Danny, first to you, what was your major vibes takeaway from what we saw?
As you said, Miles, it was just incredible. It feels like this was the first time in my personal women's basketball fandom that, you know, my siblings were reaching out, my parents were reaching out, friends were reaching out, people I hadn't spoken to in months were reaching out to be like, oh my God, Caitlin Clark. And that's amazing. Like, it's such a special watershed moment. And I was talking the other day with you all about how grateful I am to have had, like, a couple of years of perspective forming, knowing what, you know, the coverage and attention on this game was like in those years, 2017, 2018. And, you know, not having to have lived through it for too long before being able to celebrate the game with wider society like we can now. My big takeaway about all of this, though, is I kind of alluded to this already. It feels like, and we all know this to some extent, it feels like the major attention right now is on Caitlin Clark in Iowa. And it feels like the casual viewer is kind of only familiar with that. And I was even speaking to some friends who, you know, weren't familiar with the fact that South Carolina had only won, had only lost one game over the past two seasons. And, you know, like five in the past 5 years or whatever it is. And so I do think it is on us as, you know, the more seasoned women's hoops fans at this point. And, you know, the four of us, there are so many people who are much more seasoned than us. I feel like I should say that. But still, like, if you've been following the game for like 4 or 5 years, or, you know, obviously 10, 20 years, it's on us now to, you know, bear that torch for these newer fans and be like, it's not just this incredible athlete, Caitlin Clark. It's not just her. Like, obviously give her flowers, but there's so much more going on in this world. There's so many more stories to appreciate. Yeah, and I just feel this tremendous opportunity and responsibility in this moment to, you know, tell stories around women's basketball, continue pushing to get more and more people interested, and more and more people deeply interested in, you know, the absolute plethora of amazing stories and amazing people in this game and amazing teams and amazing basketball to be seen.
That's such a great answer. I want to build off so many things there. And this is classic. Miles and I always go into a podcast, be like, all right, 30 minutes. Like, that's going to be the goal. We're going to talk about Final Four. I could do an hour on this alone. But the anecdotal feeling of what you were saying with people reaching out in our lives who are really excited. It got to the point on Monday night where I almost had to make the conscious decision to put my phone out of arm's length while I was watching the games, because I'm like,
on your birthday, by the way, on your birth, happy birthday, Owen, but on your birthday, not being able to respond to like happy birthday texts because you're like, I'm locked in right now. Stop bothering.
Yeah. I appreciate the happy birthday. It was overwhelming. And it was like, I want to have this moment with each one of you who reached out, and I will. But you all also know me well enough to know that on my birthday, I want to lock into these marquee games and enjoy the basketball and soak it in, which I felt like I did, and which was really cool. And then afterwards, you know, you reach out individually and want to talk. But I think that's true, too, about how, you know, you can respond in a way of pure, unbridled enthusiasm, matching the energy of whoever reached out, while also kind of encouraging them to check out, hey, check out South Carolina. Hey, check out Saniah Rivers on NC State. She's really cool. And just try to grow their fandom and keep the ball rolling in a way where, you know, the massive name of Caitlin Clark is going to reach everyone's computer screen, everyone's TV screen. But maybe some of these players, coaches whose stories aren't told in such a, you know, national media everywhere type of way, it's cool to get the ball rolling in that sense too. So Calvin, to you, you know, what was your favorite part of really this whole buildup of the tournament and just watching the growth?
I definitely think it was people reaching out, like you guys said, and not only people reaching out who like haven't followed women's basketball before, but the way that they're reaching out, because I feel like in the past, like, people find out that you, and I'm sure you guys have had this happen, they find out you cover women's basketball and they kind of, oh, that's interesting. Why women? You know, you're trying to get exactly into men's. Yeah,
my favorite, it's always the same thing. It's always, oh, that's cool. That's really interesting. How did that come?
Exactly. Yeah. And now, instead of that, it was, hey, how about Caitlin Clark? How about this game? Who you got winning? It's the same way, like the day after the Super Bowl, you go into work and people are going to say, oh, hey, how about Patrick Mahomes? You know, like, no deep analysis, but they're very invested in this casual narrative instead of just, oh, women's basketball, huh? You know, like, they actually know a player and want to talk about the game just for the game. And so, like, that's awesome to see it get to that point and to see, like, the ratings that we got, obviously, like, the context that you know, I saw going around, basically, other than football, stack it up with the major events in sports across the board, like NBA Finals, World Series, and it beat all of them. So, but like Danny was saying, I feel like that's all really cool. But now the next step is like those casuals who reach out and say, hey, how about Caitlin Clark? Like, now how can we get them to maybe follow the second and third and fourth and fifth best players in the country and sort of like grow that to have more fans of the whole sport and not just Caitlin Clark? Because Caitlin Clark is getting people in the door and that's awesome. But now we have to keep them and sort of grow it past that.
I think that that's a really important note too, where like, I don't want to shame, and I don't want to ever use the word casual as an insult. Like, I think we all started there. We all started as fans and then grew and appreciated the sport. The only time I will use that to the, as an insult will be when it's like these major media that don't want to invest resources and are having people that clearly don't know what they're talking about and are putting their foot in their mouth. But yeah, let's use Caitlin Clark as a gateway drug. Let's have Caitlin be your entry point to women's basketball, because what have we been saying for years and years? We're like, when you watch this game, you're going to leave a fan. When you go to a game and you experience just seeing the crowd get into this and watch all of the kids that are just watching their idols in front of them, then that really has a lot more weight, a lot more impact than seeing the dudes with a bunch of numbers at the end of their screen names say, go back to the kitchen in the comments or something like that. So every time I was getting a text from someone saying like, wow, Caitlin is going off, and we saw this 41-7-12 game, I would be like, you know that Paige and Juju are coming up next, right? You're not going to turn off your TV as soon as this game ends. And I love that it was on the same station, so like, people didn't have the opportunity to then go elsewhere. But yeah, I was absolutely taking advantage of that opportunity to say, you don't have to wait until Friday for the next games. There's another game on right now, and this game is going to capture you too. So however you found the sport, welcome. And now you're here for life. Sorry, that's it.
And the other thing to tie this A block together that I think is cool is we talked so much after last year's Final Four about, okay, what is going to happen with this momentum? How do we keep this momentum going? Because it was palpable last year. It was a major turning point. And what we are seeing that payoff in this tournament, where the narratives that you talk about, that the studio show was just absolutely killing it with, just awesome breakdowns of film and of kind of overarching storylines. But the payoff is that this year people came into Iowa versus LSU with an idea of the history in that matchup, of the ramifications of what happened last year to make this an even more momentous occasion. And that was really, really cool, because a lot of times, you know, when we're talking about people coming to the game and being new to the game, they're really excited. They might know a player or two, but they don't really know the context of the matchup. And I think that is super cool, especially as we embark on this Final Four, where we're going to have a matchup of Iowa and Connecticut that we saw years ago in the Sweet 16. And if South Carolina wins, which is a big if, because we do not want to take NC State for, you know, lightly. They have had maybe the most impressive run of anyone in this tournament. But if South Carolina gets to the final, then either we've got a South Carolina-UConn rematch from a couple of years ago, or we have South Carolina-Iowa from last year. So the buildup of years and years of these players playing against each other, these teams playing against each other, now we're seeing that manifest in some really cool storylines. And people are aware of that, and that's a really exciting thing. So I want to use this time to transition into this week, Friday night. We're going to start with the team that we must start with, because it is unbelievable what the South Carolina Gamecocks have done this year. A lot of people listening will know that they graduated 5 players to the WNBA last year, including Aliyah Boston, legend, Hall of Famer, in Hall of Famer loading. I want to start with you, Danny, because we could go so many different places with this South Carolina team. They have the best offensive rating, defensive rating, net rating in the country. They got the best everything. They have not lost. They win games by a tournament best 28.7 points per game. Not only do they lead the country in net rating right now, they've led the country in net rating for three seasons with just a completely rotating cast of players. So, Danny, what is the most compelling aspect of this team to you? I'd love to hear maybe a player that you've really enjoyed watching, because this is the epitome of a team. It's just a deep team. Everyone contributes.
So hard for me to isolate one player, honestly. I think that first I want to talk about an aspect of the team game that's really, you know, turned around from last season, and that's the three-point shooting. Last season, that was ultimately South Carolina's downfall against Iowa, I would say, is just not being able to pace with that three-point shooting. They're third in the country in three-point percentage this year. That's like, I saw that a couple of weeks ago, and I was just like, I knew they were a lot better, but they went from a bottom 20 team to a top five team in that stat. And that's everything. I mean, in this modern game, you know, it's pretty simple math. Three is more than two. We're always saying it. It is true. and yeah, you know, you add that to the, obviously you graduated Liam Austin, and that's a huge loss in the post, but you get Camila Cardoso in that starting center role, and you can't be upset with that. And, you know, you add to that amazing post presence that South Carolina has always boasted, that perimeter presence, and it's hard for me to see them losing. It's extremely hard for me to see them losing, being good, as you were kind of alluding to, the best at everything. A couple of players I feel like I need to shout out with regard to that three-point shooting, though. Tahina Pau-Pau has been incredible this year. I mean, she's had some cold moments recently, but what she's brought in terms of stretching the floor for South Carolina has been amazing. I love the way that Donna's helped her build confidence in her game in terms of, you know, shooting off the dribble and just orchestrating an offense. What a blessing to, you know, see a guard like that that might have gotten a little bit lost in a faltering Oregon team be able to transfer to South Carolina and, you know, make such a mark. And then, you know, the freshman off the bench, Malaysia Fulwiley, we all love her so much. She's electric. What she brings in those moments where she comes in to sustain a lead rather than build a lead with that three-point shooting is great. I mean, like, you keep up the pace, you have another really dynamic on-ball guard who can just create her own offense and, you know, shoot the lights out of the gym. I'm super excited to, you know, you talked about those seniors graduating last year, and I came into the season very low on South Carolina, honestly, with that turnover. But, you know, I've kind of learned that they're just a program where there's always something coming down the pipe, and Malaysia Fulwiley is that right now. You know, this is going to be her team in a couple of years, and I'm so excited for that.
Well, they also put us on notice immediately, right? We started with that game in Paris where they blew out Notre Dame by double digits. And then they started their season against a bunch of like top 15 teams and we're blowing them all out. So very quickly we were like, oh, okay, they're here. And you brought up so many names, and maybe it's just because minutes before we started this pod, our friend Mark Schindler put out a profile on Raven Johnson that I wanted to highlight Raven too, because she's fresh in my mind. But especially on the defensive end. And when we talk about defense with this team, it makes sense that you'll think first about the rim, right? You'll think first about Camila Cardoso. You'll think first about Ashlyn Watkins and just what deterrents they are inside. But it's really, it doesn't all start there. And on the perimeter, Raven has been so huge for them. And especially Mark points out in the way that she defends and blows up pick and rolls. So I know that defense is not as sexy as the logo three. And I think that's our next step, is getting fans to appreciate what they're seeing on the defensive end. And I mean, getting a lot of media too, I think. But Calvin, what have you seen defensively from this team? Because yeah, it is wild how often we see SC at the top of the defensive ratings every year. And it's not just rebounding. It's not just one way, but also in Dawn's just flexibility, because Danny talked about how Dawn has really completely revamped the entire structure of this team, but still is able to keep that consistency on the defensive end of the ball. What have you seen from that end with this squad?
They're so connected and they know the system. And that's why you can have, when you go back and look at the previous, you know, 2-3 South Carolina teams who were also so dominant, so much turnover from those teams, and still have the same elite defense. Because it's not about, obviously they do have elite defenders. Aaliyah Boston was elite defender, Camilla Cardoso, but it's not just about having any one or two elite defenders. It's about all five players on the court knowing exactly what they're supposed to do, where Dawn expects them to be, what the game plan is, and basically all five being of one mind and sync. And that's what's so fun to watch, I think, for, like you said, sometimes casuals don't always get into the defensive side, but all of us are like hardcore hoop junkies. And for us, you know, watching that defense, for me, like a defense that's so connected, and when you can tell all five people are just moving, it's almost as beautiful as when you talk about like an offense that has so much ball movement and shooting and fluidity. It's just like a beautiful sight. And I think Dawn, her ability, I've talked about this with you guys before and on the Coast to Coast podcast, but her ability to retain players, because you don't just have to be a recruiter in today's age, you have to be a retainer with the transfer portal. And her ability to do that by developing a culture and relationships really helps that out, because you're able to bring in high level recruits who probably could start, like, I legitimately think 360 Division I teams, my Lajeful Wiley would start on 359 of them, but she's not starting on this team. And you can bring in players like that, and they're willing to buy in and come off the bench for a year or two. And you can look at the starting lineup now, obviously, other than Pow Pow, who transferred in, most of them started out playing behind some superstars on the bench too, and probably could have started somewhere else. But because they're willing to come into this program, come off the bench, learn from the veterans, stick with the program, and develop into juniors and seniors, they learn that defense so well in a way that not every player in every program would, just spending a year or two with the program. So I think that's a big piece of it too.
And Mylesia was benched at one point this year, early this season, because she had to work on her defense a bit. So it's not just in terms of the, you know, the holistic team concept, but when you talk about that retaining, there's a lot of trust that I think Dawn builds in terms of bringing in high character people and being a high character person herself, where she's able to make those human connections while also doing what's best for the team, knowing that the ultimate goal is, you know, this weekend, right? It's not a game in November. And in having a freshman in Mylesia kind of understand that, and we know she understood it because she took it to heart, and we've seen the tangible growth, I think also just speaks to just Dawn as a leader, as a coach, as, you know, and an influence on these young players too.
You're really seeing with Dawn this year, and we're going to get to NC State in a quick second here, because I think that the way in which Dawn has supported Saniya Rivers transferring to NC State and thriving for NC State, and now they are playing against each other in the Final Four, and it's not this thing that you hear from such a large percentage of college coaches, oh, the transfer portal, I hate it, all this stuff. It's like, no, this is such a mutually beneficial thing, and really, really cool. So I find that so indicative of the way in which Dawn has connected with so many players, even the ones that decide that South Carolina is not the best place for them. But before we do move on to NC State, I gotta highlight a couple quick things. One, to your point, Calvin, about Dawn and just the way in which they've adjusted. And also to your point, Danny, about the three-point shooting, you know, a criticism of the offense last year was, oh, not enough pick and roll, not enough ball screens. You know, I saw some empty side pick and roll this past weekend from South Carolina that was really effective. Like, Dawn is not only building a program where these players adore her and want to play so hard for her and believe in her, but also she is building a program that's adaptable. It's not, oh, this is how I do things and I'm going to do it the same way every year. No, it's okay. Let's look at what happened in the Final Four last year against Iowa, and let's try to improve upon that. How can we get better tangibly on the court in the X's and O's? And she has completely changed the offensive scheme in a really impressive way. Two players I want to shout out before we move on to NC State. Bree Hall is like the heartbeat of this team in some ways. It feels like Bree Hall scores maybe, I don't know what, I don't have her points per game in front of me. I'm going to guess it's around 7 or 8. And yet it feels like those are the most important 7 or 8 points of every close game. It feels like when they need a bucket when the other team's on a 10-0 run, it's like, oh, Bree Hall's going to go and just take care of that and play exceptional defense on the wing. Such a huge fan of her game. And then how about Tessa Johnson, the freshman, like a player that no one even really talks about in the rotation in her first tournament, and just really clutch guard play. Again, you know, South Carolina's gotten tested 2 games in a row. Indiana had a furious second half run, made that game really sweaty. Oregon State, just an awesome tournament run, made that game really sweaty. They are really relying on 9 players to get this done. And you don't see that very often with an undefeated team, the number one overall seed. So really cool stuff all around. Could talk about South Carolina forever. But we're gonna swing it to NC State here. I'm gonna start with you, Calvin. One thing you've highlighted is the defensive rebounding of this NC State team. And I would love to hear why you think that could be so important in this matchup.
Well, first off, because South Carolina is an elite offensive rebounding team. So if you are going to have any shot to beat them, you have to rebound on the defensive end. And I think Indiana did that really well in the second half of that game that you mentioned, which is why they were able to kind of claw their way back in it. I was looking at the stats. South Carolina only got 2 offensive rebounds that whole second half, which for them is a minuscule number. So, and obviously South Carolina still won that game. They can still come out ahead because of all that they're good at. But if you want to have a shot, you got a rebound on the defensive end. NC State does that. But what's most impressive to me is that how NC State does it by committee. They don't have anyone on the team averaging 7 rebounds a game. And yet they're still, I see you put it in our notes here, 12th in the country in defensive rebounding percentage without anyone getting 7, because they have so many players who average 5 or 6 or whatever. Every single player on the court is rebounding on every possession. They're all boxing out. It's not a 2 or 3 person effort, and it's the guards, it's the wings, it's 1 through 5. And so I think that that's been really impressive to me throughout this tournament run. And in this upcoming game, they're going to have to do that if they want to keep it close.
And you brought up that the guards are so involved in the play too. And we have to, first of all, talk about what Isaiah James did on the real 3-point line, I think it was. She shot 5 for 5 in the first half last game.
It was the real one, yep.
I think that was the real one. And in these 4 games, I know it's a small sample, but it's not that small of a sample when you're talking about elite competition. But Isaiah James is averaging 24.3 points per game, and she's making 4 threes on 57% shooting. That is more than double. She made 1.9 threes a game on 34.4% in the regular season. So talk about rising to the moment. We've brought up Saniah Rivers before, who I think to get to this point in the tournament, we see that you need to have a player that can go and get you a bucket. And Saniah has been doing that all year long. But what I wanted to highlight about NC State's guard play is just as a team, they do not turn the ball over. And when you talk about SC being an offensive rebounding team, that's one way to be opportunistic. Another way is to get those easy baskets in transition and to really then make the game your pace. And NC State on the season was in the 97th percentile for fewest turnovers, averaging just 12.1 a game. But in the tourney, they've lowered that to just 7.8 per game, which is just an astounding number when you just think about the high pressure that you're seeing in terms of literally on the court and just everything that's going on around you. So Danny, what have you seen from these NC State guards that have kept them alive and kept them moving on where they've been a dogs in these last few games?
Well, that connectivity that they had is incredible. I mean, they play together extremely well. It feels like they all have this preternatural sense of where all of their teammates are on the floor at all times. Yeah, I mean, 7.8 turnovers per game in the tournament is astounding. It's a fake number, it feels like. It feels impossible. I want to especially shout them out for keeping that up against Texas. Texas turns over the ball about as well as anyone in the country. I mean, I really thought they were going to be able to break this for NC State. I really thought that their defense was going to be able to, you know, I think it was Calvin that pointed out that both Tennessee and Stanford are bottom 20 in the country in turnover or in opponent turnovers. And so I really thought they were going to be overwhelmed by the pressure that Texas brought after seeing those two very soft teams in that regard. But no, they were able to keep it up. I mean, it kind of felt like a unstoppable force, immovable object thing where the unstoppable force just shot straight through the immovable object. And that makes it, that's one of the things that makes me really nervous about South Carolina, which is they're obviously the best defensive team in the country. They can turn over other teams, but they're not as specifically good as that statistically as Texas was. So if Texas can't break this, and if Texas can't force NC State to turn it over, can South Carolina is kind of my big question heading into NC State, South Carolina.
This is a great point, and I think that plays into the connectivity aspect, because one of the biggest questions that I had coming into the tournament for NC State is, what are they going to do with a 10-point lead in the second half? I remember a game against Virginia Tech. I think it was the Liz Kitley game winner, you know, in conference play, where NC State failed to score a field goal for 7 minutes in the fourth quarter. And it was really like one of the only weak spots. And it's such a hard thing to do, play with a lead. I mean, every level of basketball teams struggle with that. And, you know, even though they've had a lead, and yeah, maybe Tennessee in the second round chipped into that lead and made it close or whatever, but NC State has handled their business. Like, they are protecting the ball and they're not seeding these leads that maybe they did earlier in the season. That growth is so impressive. And then when you've got a guard like Isaiah James, who's on a heater like this, it gets to the point where you wonder whether they can do the impossible and upset South Carolina. We've come to prediction hour here. I would love to hear, you know, you can take it straight up. You can go against the spreads, South Carolina favored by around 11. What are we thinking here for this matchup, either of you?
Well, I just want to cut in first and say, this is my favorite part about hosting, because I've been on way too many TV show panels, whatever, where like I'm there sweating, because I think the four of us are friends partially because we view the game through this positive prism where we never want to say anything negative about anybody. And we're just like constantly like throwing back and forth positive energy. And we've done nothing but say great stuff about these teams so far. So I just want to say that I'm not on the hot seat. So I'm not going to let Owen say, whoever's comfortable saying it. We're going to have both of you give your prediction. And we're
I'll give my prediction too. We can do the Sean Evans hot ones. I'll eat the wings too. You know, I'm eating da bomb over here.
I just got us out of that, but okay, fine. Let's do it. No, you start.
Calvin, you first. What are we thinking here?
Who, you know, in terms of who's going to win, I have to go with South Carolina. I obviously, a lot of teams have pushed them. You know, we saw Tennessee a few weeks ago do it, and then the last two teams in this tournament, none of them have quite gotten over that hump. And I don't think I see NC State getting over that hump either. I also don't really see NC State getting run out of the gym at this point because of the way that they're playing. And obviously South Carolina has done that to some really good teams. That first game that Miles mentioned of the season, they played Notre Dame, who has been fantastic all year, beat them by 30. South Carolina is capable of that, but I don't see that happening in this game either. So, I mean, Owen mentioned the spread. Obviously we do a lot of betting. I think the spread's pretty close, 11 and a half, 11, whatever. I can see this being a game where South Carolina sort of controls it, but never really kind of puts it away until the last couple minutes, and then makes some free throws, extends a 7-point lead to 11, something like that, and ends up winning. So I think it'll be something like that.
Wow, how brave of you, Calvin, to predict exactly what the spread is going to be. This iconic stuff right here. Danny, what you got?
I feel like I have to be spicier now.
You got
to
be spicier.
Yeah, I got to be spicy. Obviously, I think South Carolina is going to win. I'm not going to go spicy in the other direction. I feel like that would be clown makeup, clown shoes, clown nose. I'll go ahead and say that I think that there is certainly a pretty good chance that South Carolina, at the very least, has a lead of 25 points during this game. Do they keep it? Does it end there? That's a huge question. But I think that they can build a big lead on NC State. It's you know, we've seen them kind of put the, take their foot off the gas because they can in second halves when they build a big lead. I could see it being similar to Indiana in that respect. I particularly think that we've seen the last crazy Zaza James game of this tournament already. I think that I just look at her numbers. I see shooting variance. I see, you know, I see numbers begging to regress to the mean. And she's going up against the best defense in the country, perhaps the best basketball defense in the world right now, I would say. I can see her being held under not only her tournament average, but her season average in this game. And that's one thing that I think can be a huge separator for South Carolina. If they hold her to like the mid-teens to like 15 points, you know, where is that scoring going to come from for NC State? You know, Saniya can only do so much. They definitely have the personnel to tee them both up. So yeah, if I have to put a number on it, I'm going to say South Carolina by 15. I would, in a betting sense, would be scared to take 11.5. Not the way I'm approaching the game, but if yeah, for the points of this exercise, they're winning by 15 points, and it's going to be that they seed a bigger lead to get there.
I think that's a great point too, is that there was, we had a running joke last year that South Carolina would always start games slowly, knowing that they could turn it on at any time. And we haven't seen that as much this season, but especially not in this tournament. They've really been running and imposed their will from the jump. So yeah, it's the counter to what Owen was saying about NC State being able to hold leads late. Are we going to see maybe the counter of that? So Owen, I'll throw it at you. Who's winning this game?
Yeah, I'm even though I was poking fun at Calvin for not going spicy, I'm going to do the exact same thing here. Like the game that I'm drawing comparisons to in my head is the Final Four game from 2 years ago when South Carolina won it all, where they beat Louisville, and Louisville was just a really good team, really tough team. And it never felt like a blowout, but it also never felt close. And that's the vibe that I'm getting from this. I think the shooting variance question with Isaiah James is really fascinating. I love considering players who go on a heater for the biggest stretch of their career, and whether it's sustainable, whether it's, it defies math almost. It's like just stepping to the occasion. Ari McDonald is an interesting example of this, where, you know, maybe she had more responsibility over the course of that season with Arizona than Isaiah James did for NC State this year. But similar type of thing where all of a sudden, oh, this player can't miss from three after being a 30% three-point shooter during the season. Does that sustain through the Final Four, or does that wear off at a certain point? And I think, Danny, your point about this South Carolina defense would be the logical place where that run would come to an end, to no fault of Isaiah, who's just played the most remarkable stretch of basketball imaginable. So I would say, in keeping, you know, I can't remember specifically what the score was of that South Carolina Louisville game from 2 years ago, but it's feeling like a 14, 15 point victory where it probably stretches to 20 and then goes down to 8 and is somewhere in that range, where South Carolina is not exactly sweating, but it's also not, you know, a complete blowout. It's a game that stays within reach for a while. Miles, are you going to forego the prediction responsibilities here, which would be fair? But,
well, all I will say is that there is an episode that Owen and I filmed when we first started this podcast that never made it to the light, which was last year's Final Four, where we got every single prediction we made wrong. Yep. And we were so grateful that we forgot to, I think it was something like we forgot to press send on the upload and it was like too late. And then I think we had South Carolina, Virginia Tech in the championship, right? And it was just like everything that we said, every reason we said everything just was completely wrong. So for that, yeah, I'm going to plead the fifth, because I'm not going to be wrong in this scenario. I'm going to take full advantage of everything that this chair as host has to offer, and instead move us on to the next game on our slate, Iowa and UConn.
I can't believe you're not even willing to say that South Carolina will win the game.
Somebody will. I'm willing to say that somebody will. And that team will then play again on Sunday.
The red team.
Win that game. Yeah.
Miles is going with the red team.
I actually bet on no one to win. So that is really long shot there, but I actually
both teams to lose.
No one can win it. It's a, yeah, real hot take.
Yeah, no, I'm not a coward. I am just making sure that I'm driving this thing and rooting for great basketball. Because if my bracket in the 38th percentile will tell you anything, it's that I'm not the person whose predictions you should be taking anyway.
Wait, brief aside before we move on to Iowa, Connecticut, can we discuss how embarrassing it is? We started this off talking about everyone texting us and being so excited about women's basketball. People also asked me for predictions for their bracket. I'm like, you don't understand. This expertise, this immense fandom I have for women's basketball is not translating to the bracket. I am like sub 50th percentile every year. And it frankly, it's embarrassing.
Well, that's not how brackets work. That's not how March Madness works. It's not always the people who know the most who win, because if that was the case, it wouldn't be Madness. It would be like regular March. But the chaos is what we love. And sometimes people come in and have pick based on their favorite mascots, and that's who wins. And that's why it's fun.
So true.
Yeah.
I picked based on hottest coach for the men's bracket, and that's doing significantly better than my women's bracket is.
All right, let's move on to Iowa and UConn. With that great transition. We talked a little bit about Monday night already and everything that was amazing for that. But something that really stood out to me was just seeing Paige, what Paige has been doing on this historic run. And thank you, Cal, for tweeting literally minutes before jumping into this note where you said there have been three times in the Her Hoop Stats era, which is the past 15 seasons, where a player has had 28 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and a block in an NCAA tournament game. All three of them are Paige Bueckers games in this tournament. So, Paige Bueckers, first of all, how is she doing this? And then second of all, how do you stop her from doing this?
Well, first off, shout out to Duke for being the one team who didn't let her do this whole tournament. But the fact that she's done something three times in four games that no one else has done in 15 seasons is in the fact that, like, obviously Caitlin Clark is playing phenomenal basketball, but I feel like Paige right now, the run that she's on is, I don't know how you stop it. I don't have the answer, honestly, to that question. We'll see if Lisa Bluter does this week, but I think you just have to hope that you can kind of contain everyone else and maybe get I'm going to put cold in quotes because I don't see Paige going cold, but if Paige shoots slightly above average instead of scorching hot, that would help a lot. And I mean, you have to, we'll see how Iowa defends it because they do go zone a lot, and going zone against UConn might work when you have Aaliyah Edwards and Ice Brady on the court together. I do think Paige can carve up a zone pretty well, so I wouldn't say that's the answer to stopping Paige specifically. You're going to have to put size on her, and I know that Iowa loves to put Gabby Marshall on the other team's best perimeter player when they go man. So I could see them doing that. It's probably not what I would do because I do think you need to have more size on Paige. So I would probably go with Kate Martin, but I'm going to be interested to see what Lisa Bluter does in that regard. Ultimately though, I don't think you can really stop her at this point. I think you can just hope to make up for it somewhere else if you're going to win the game.
Well, I think that what makes her such a tough guard against a zone heavy team is the way that she's constantly moving and that she gets to her spots. She's not a cold shooter because she doesn't take bad shots. When she's cold, she'll have games from three that she's not knocking down those shots, but she's constantly coming off of curls, free throw line jumpers. She's punishing mismatches. When you talk about not having enough size over her, she's not someone who is afraid of backing another guard down in the post. So she's very, very just polished with at all levels of her game and at getting to the rim and everything like that. And I agree that that's, you're going to have to bring multiple coverages to her because she's also very good at reading defenses and what they're doing. And yeah, I don't know if there's a player who's more equipped to carve up that middle of his own. Is that's what gets lost a lot of times to these teams than someone who will just completely eat whenever she gets a sliver of daylight.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about Paige's defense a bit, because one thing that really amazed me that I saw in that USC game is Paige covering Caitlin Davis in a lot of those possessions. Caitlin Davis played center full time at Columbia last year.
Yeah.
Paige can guard 1 through 5. That's something that doesn't get discussed enough, I think. Like, obviously, Caitlin Davis is a small center, was a small center when she was in that position, played power forward, I should say, for USC. But her switchability on defense is incredible. Her size for a point guard is incredible. Like, when you actually stop and appreciate her wingspan, her height, how built she is, like, she's an amazing defensive prospect. And I feel like, you know, what she does on the other end is incredible. The stats are so eye-popping, but she's just so, so switchable. Such a modern guard wing in the women's game. I'm so excited about her W prospects. It almost kills me that we have to wait another year.
And I don't want to, obviously, you never are happy about injuries, but if there's a silver lining of UConn's injuries, that we've gotten to see that side of Paige more this year, because they've lost some, especially like Aubrey Griffin, some of the front court players. So Paige has sort of been the de facto four for them, where she kind of came in her freshman year as a point guard and she leads the team in blocks. That's mind blowing. She is the leading shot blocker on UConn. It's not a true big. It's Paige Beckers.
It's crazy. It's ludicrous to guard 1 through 5 and then also be like, okay, yeah, now you're going to have to guard Juju Watkins for a stretch. By the way, you're also like carrying our entire offense, but also could you guard this generational transcendent player on the other team for a little bit too, if you don't mind? She's like, nah, I got it. It's silly. It's also kind of fun. I think it's almost perfect for how their games are, that Paige has this stretch that you alluded to, Calvin, of those 3 games that we haven't seen statistically in 15 years of, you know, her hoop stats tracking. And then on the other side, and that type of game is the perfect Paige game. It's not a 40-point game. It's just 28 points, 29 points, whatever it is, some rebounds, some assists, some blocks, some steals, just all around exceptional play. Then you flip to the Iowa side, and you have Caitlin Clark, who said, oh, I've been thinking about last year's national championship all year long, and this is the most pressure anyone could ever imagine because we've got 16 million people watching here at one point. And you know what I'm going to do about it? Just a cool 41-12-7. Like, just casually hit 9 threes, 12 assists. I'm out of words for what she is doing, and I think an underrated aspect of what she is doing is that the chemistry she has with Kate Martin, with Gabby Marshall, who she's just played with for years, is so apparent. She's so comfortable in knowing exactly where the spacing, the shooting around her is going to be, and to stop this spread offense feels like an impossible task. Danny, how would you possibly stop this Iowa spread offense that is so terrifying?
I think one really good thing that UConn has going for them is that they don't have Haley Van Lith. I think that's huge.
Not too much on Haley.
Hey, right. I'm sorry. I love it. Y'all know I love Haley Van Lith. We can cut that out. yeah, no, she was absolutely left out to dry. I think you saw in that UConn-USC game that, you know, the way that they switched up coverages on Juju and the way that they were able to kind of, you know, bring posts out to put a little bit more pressure on her, double her up a little bit more, mainly just not leave one player to guard her one-on-one for an entire game for some reason, like Kim Mulkey did. You know, there was a grain of truth in what Mulkey said in her post-game conference. No one truly can stop Caitlin Clark. But yeah, I do think that UConn is at least, despite being so depleted, equipped with really good perimeter defenders, really long players. Gino has been here before with having to, you know, playing against transcendent players. Obviously, there's never been a Caitlin Clark before, but yeah, I think there's a chance that we see a scoring performance in the 20s from Caitlin in this, which would be crazy, even if she scored 29 points. Again, I feel like if I had a good answer for this, I would be making so much money to be a head coach somewhere.
I asked you an impossible question.
Well, I'm going off the top of my head, but I think if I remember correctly, in the two games that Caitlin has faced UConn, she's averaging, I think, 24 points on below 40% shooting and has lost both times. So there is something to that. And obviously, right now, we are seeing a player who on the biggest stage is putting together some of the biggest performances. So I don't know if, you know, you're heat checking her at the height of her powers right now. But so much of what you said, I think that was great, was about how UConn was able to disrupt Juju Watkins off the ball. And part of that is, I think that was a very, very good USC team in terms of, especially as a defensive-minded team that kind of set the tone and was able to play their game. But it was a team that you were able to cheat off of some players out there in a way that I think that's a little bit harder with Iowa, because it's this spread offense and there are so many shooters. But there's also the fact that you can survive Caitlin scoring 40 points, or you could survive Caitlin having 12 assists. I don't know that you could survive both. And I think that that is something that Gino and that whole UConn staff is going to have to be intentional about, is that if you bring a double team to Caitlin Clark, she will find those cutters. If you don't get back, if you're not the first person back on defense because you're trying to steal an offensive rebound, then she will throw that football Hail Mary pass and nail it 85% of the time. And Juju is a terrific passer, but we're seeing what Caitlin is doing, having led the country in assists for years now, is her court vision and her anticipation. I don't know if it's maybe as simple as even bringing extra help, because she can make you pay there too. So Calvin, is there anything that you think that they could learn from how they defended Juju in a positive way, but also is there anything that you saw work against Juju that might not work against Iowa and Caitlin?
There's a lot of both. Yeah, I think, well, to Danny's point, I think Danny hit the nail on the head that what UConn did against Juju was a lot better than what LSU did against Caitlin in terms of really it being a team effort and not any one player. Obviously, Nika Mule started out guarding Juju and Nika got after it. We know Nika defensively isn't going to back down from anyone, and that was fun to watch. But they did some switching as well. They tried to force her left. That's something I don't think you can do with Caitlin. We saw Brittany Sykes the other day tweet out, "Hey, why are we still letting Caitlin go left and shoot?" You know, and so I can't wait to see Brittany Sykes defend Caitlin in the WNBA. As a side note, but
my one follow-up to that was, did you see that Slim then quote tweeted herself and said, "Yeah,
I did
to your draft. So when I am inevitably burned by Caitlin going left on me, I want you to save me for a seat," because that was so good.
It was. She got ahead of it. She got ahead of it. That was smart. So I don't think you can do that. I think the switching will work, because I think UConn, we've talked about with Paige, obviously, and some others, is a pretty switchable team. So I think they can do some of that. They can help somewhat, but like you said, Miles, USC has two non-shooters in their starting lineup, and Rhea Marshall and Caitlin Davis, and USC pretty aggressively helped off of both of them to try to crowd Juju. Really, on Iowa, the only player that you're going to do that with in the starting lineup is Hannah Stolke, and it's a lot different when you only have one versus when you have two, because they're always going to have at least four shooters around Hannah Stolke. Sometimes when she's on the bench, they have five. So it's going to be a lot harder to send a full crowd at Caitlin because of the spacing that she has around her, and because of, like you brought up, her passing ability, to where she's going to be able to find people if you do that. So there's definitely some things that probably they're going to have to do different than they did against Juju. But I do think the switching and putting size on Caitlin can at least help a little bit.
It's an impossible code to crack. I think that what UConn did against Juju was so impressive, and also what Juju did to keep USC in the game was so impressive, given that, like you said, Calvin, they start two non-shooters, and even Caleb Padilla, who's a great three-point shooter, just got cold at an unfortunate time. And it really all came down to Ken McKenzie Forbes and Juju Watkins hit shots. You're not going to have that in this round because Iowa, you can hope that Gabby Marshall and Kate Martin don't hit their shots. It's not a bet I would want to take if they're going to be wide open. Kate Martin, I would trust Kate Martin in the corner with a three with everything on the line more than, you know, 98% of players in the country. A lot of it is it could just come down to shooting variance. I think the last thing we wanted to highlight here with this matchup, and Danny, you've talked about this off air, is the pace angle. Iowa flies up and down the floor. They are in the 97th percentile in the country in pace for the entire season. They're sixth in this tournament. UConn, on the other hand, 61st percentile this season, so a little bit above average, but not a team that flies up and down. 32nd in this tourney, so both of those tournament numbers are kind of in line with where these teams were in the regular season. So what do you think the pace is going to look like in this game? And can UConn, especially with the lack of depth they have due to these injuries, we saw the foul trouble flare its head in the Elite Eight. And shout out to Nika Mule and KK Arnold for playing with 2, 3, 4 fouls throughout the game and being able to be really effective. That was so impressive to me. Also, shout out to Aaliyah Edwards, who we haven't mentioned yet, who just quietly had such an awesome game and who's such an amazing player. And I just could not be higher on her game. So she, if UConn wins, Aaliyah Edwards is going to have a lot to do with it. But Danny, how do you see the pace playing out in this game? Can UConn, with their limited depth, with fouls maybe being an issue, are they going to be able to muck it up and slow it down? Or is Iowa just going to be up and down, zooming across the floor, you know, getting to their spots?
I think that if the game plan from UConn is to try to match Iowa's pace and their scoring, they're going to lose.
Yeah.
And I think that Gino knows that. I a different story, obviously, especially if they had Fudd healthy. But right now they just, you know, you get into a shootout with Iowa, you better bring some really big guns. And they just don't have it right now. Can Paige possibly keep up with Caitlin? Yeah, in some games, I could see that happening. In some versions of this reality, I could see that happening, but not full team. So I do think that they have to look to muck it up. They have to look to slow it down, bother Iowa, you know, disrupt those passing lanes a little bit and try to force some turnovers. And, you know, I would say also just really take their time when they're in possession and try to kind of psychologically slow down Iowa with their own slower possessions. Because if they do allow themselves to get sped up, that foul trouble is going to come. The way Iowa plays is just too fast with how depleted UConn is. And I can see them getting into a place where they really don't want to be in if they are playing fast, if they are trying to, you know, run up and down the floor, the defense is just going to get messy. I don't like that for them. I do think the answer is just play their game. Don't try to play Iowa's game. Do your best with the defense. As we said, it's kind of an impossible task. I certainly don't think that if they run back and forth and jack up threes that they're going to win this game.
And that's a difference from what we saw from LSU, who is such a fast team on their own too. So they are very confident. We saw it both, you know, the other night, but also last year in the championship game, that they are willing to run. And I think in some aspects that gives you the best shot against somebody like Iowa, like Caitlin Clark and that squad. But in other nights, if you don't have, you have to like match them with your A-plus game and hope for a C game on the other end, or you have to disrupt them. And I agree that UConn's going to have to control that tempo a little bit. All right, before we get you guys out of here and on the road to Cleveland, it's prediction time again. I guess I will be the game show host here because I'm going to not answer. So we'll do this. I'll put on my Alex Trebek hat and mustache, I guess. And in the form of an answer, I guess, the winner of the game, give me Danny. Who is blank?
It's in the form of a question.
It has to be in the form of a question or you're wrong.
Thanks, Ken. Who are the Iowa High, or I guess who is actually the proper syntax, apparently. My editors keep telling me.
Okay, we did not.
Yes. Who is the Iowa Hawkeyes?
Okay. Calvin, what you got?
I don't know why that just sounds incorrect to me grammatically for some reason. It probably is correct.
It bothers me so much, but I keep getting corrected to is instead of are when talking about teams, and I hate it.
I'm going to say, who are the Hawkeyes? I'm just going to say it like that because I feel like it sounds
who
better.
Who are they?
Nobody knows.
Are they?
Nobody, who are the
That's
Hawkeyes?
That's a good question.
They're right. Too fast. You can't see them.
Owen, are you going to go chalk with the one seed for a 1-1 matchup, or are you going to deviate from our guests that know more than we do?
Our guests definitely know more than we do. That is the best bet here on the board. I'm going to form consensus, but I will say before I give my answer of who is / are the Iowa Hawkeyes, I must say I'm going to do something very off brand, which is I'm going to give Gino Auriemma some real credit here for his in-game coaching, because I do think that, like, there was a stark contrast watching those two games between Kim Mulkey's total inability to do anything coherent from a game plan perspective on defense and Gino doing something very coherent with, oh, by the way, very limited depth defensively. So what I saw from Gino made me think that UConn has more of a chance here than maybe I would have previously anticipated. Ultimately, Iowa has the look of a team that is on a damn mission. They are so locked in right now, and I don't see anything disrupting that. Iowa was dealt, arguably, I think we would all agree, the toughest region, and they flew through it. And they were tied at halftime with LSU, but ultimately they flew through that region. Frankly, the sweatiest it got was the second round against West Virginia, which is fascinating given West Virginia's MO. And maybe UConn looks at that game and sees some stuff in there that could be applicable to Friday night. Ultimately, and this is no knock at UConn's region, which I also felt was really difficult. We were all very high on Ohio State. I'm incredibly high on USC. Duke deserves so much credit for what they did. Ultimately, I think UConn had a little bit of an easier path and maybe were able to exploit more weaknesses in the teams that they played versus what they're going to be able to do against Iowa. Thus, consensus, who is the Iowa Hawkeyes? I see Iowa.
Who am?
Yeah, by a close game for the majority, and then I see it stretching into the 6, 7, 8 point range. I think it's going to be a battle, but give me Iowa.
I was going to continue the bit and say, why are the Iowa Hawkeyes? But we've already, after saying that this would be a tight 30, 40-minute conversation, I think we've eclipsed an hour. So I will not ask you why. You gave us a bunch of whys. I am disappointed in all of you for taking the 2-1 seeds to meet in the championship, and know that I may or may not agree with you. And that I will tell you, I told you so, if you were wrong.
How could you say something so controversial yet so brave, Miles?
Danny, Calvin, thank you so much. This was a great conversation.
What Danny, a joy.
I'll start with you and just say, thank you for doing this, but is there anything that you've written recently? Where can people find you? Where can people come and yell at you when they lose bets off of your articles? Just give us all that news.
Yeah, no, you can find me both on Twitter, and it is Twitter, or the Action Network app at DBL Fluidity. That's D as in Danny, B as in Bar Lobby. Other than that, I'm doing a lot of work for Odds Shopper right now. You can find all those articles on my Twitter. Those are daily best bets, and I'll have a couple of most outstanding player props as well in the next couple of days. And then, as always, Winsider and her hoop stats, my two OGs.
Love it. Love it. And Calvin, where can we find you at?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at CWetzel31. Wetzel is like pretzel with a W. And so you can go find
Wetzel,
me there.
Sorry, your name is Wetzel?
That is exactly
what I want you to change your Twitter name to Pretzel with a W. I think that would be awesome.
You can go find me there, and we'll have an episode of Coast to Coast with Karina Mustafa coming out early next week, breaking down the Final Four and the championship game after that. And then also either Thursday night or Friday night, I'm not sure which, but I'll tweet it out. I'll be on CBS HQ ahead of Final Four breaking it down as well. So you can go check that out also.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you guys so much. Have a safe drive. I know you're carpooling, so whoever is, you stay awake. And we can't wait to see all the coverage that you both put out.
Cheers, y'all.